Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Hey everyone, welcome to This is Steph Sober, a weekly podcast for those in need of some sober support. I'm your host, Steph, and in this episode, I have a chat with Daniel Patterson. You may know him as Patterson Perspective on TikTok or Instagram. I first came across Daniel in my early sober days scrolling through TikTok. And because he's a fellow anxious human, I instantly related to his content, and it helped me see that self-medicating my anxiety with alcohol was definitely not the answer. When he's not inspiring us all on social media, he co-hosts a podcast with his friend Jenna. It's called Sobriety Uncensored, and it's one of my favorites. So you can imagine, I was really, really thrilled to invite him on and have him as a guest. Daniel, thank you. I genuinely had so much fun chatting with you, and I'm stoked to share this conversation with the listeners. You guys are all in for a treat, let me tell you. This is Daniel Sober. I've been following you since my sober curious days.
Oh,
so I feel like I have a little bit of an advantage because I feel like I've known you a while and like what you're about.
Sure.
And Jenna as well. And I think the algorithm gave me Jenna because I was following you, type of a thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But the universe works in mysterious ways.
I love the universe. Love the universe. So I mean, I don't even know where to start with you. I have like all these notes. I'm like, oh my gosh, where do we start?
We just start talking.
I just have so much that I want to like pick your brain about, but let's just start with anxiety.
Yeah. Welcome to the shit show.
You know, I listened to your episode. I think it was 25 with Jenna, where you were talking about your anxiety.
Yeah.
And there, I found it interesting because you had anxiety before you became a heavy drinker.
Yes.
As you talked about. And for me, I didn't have anxiety until I became a heavy drinker.
Oh. So as a result of the drinking.
Yeah.
Was it rebound anxiety? Like you got it because you weren't drinking? Yeah.
I was a binge drinker. So, and it took me 17 years. I'm a very slow learner. 17 years to connect the dots.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Very similar to me. I didn't quit until I was 35 and I started when I was about 16. So, and those boomerang benders, I call them, is what really, so I already have anxiety. I'm still anxious all the time. But it would be bookended by the anxiety that's caused by alcohol. So it was like double the fun, but boomerang benders would be like, you know, I would drink because I was anxious. It's like throwing a boomerang and I would feel less anxious and then it would come back and smack me in the face. It would be like times two. So yeah, anxiety is no joke in my opinion. It's been a real battle.
Yeah. I mean, I feel for you because you quit drinking, but like you said, you still battle it.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Did yours? Oh, yours went away. That's so good.
I know.
I think that's good for people to know because
it is
a lot of the mental health issues that people are experiencing when drinking is from drinking. You know, it's like the depression, the anxiety, all of the chaos and drama. That's a direct deposit into your chaotic bank account from vodka, in my case. But my anxiety is like 10 times easier to manage than it was when I was
I mean, drinking. Your medication probably is a little bit more effective.
Well, it actually works. So there's it works. And I remember things I did. So that's fun. and I'm not necessarily apologizing as much. Although I still, you know, say things I don't mean sometimes, but, or I mean, but I shouldn't have said either way. But I don't think that, being sober eliminates mental health.
No.
Completely, because the human experience is still the human experience, and my genetic loading is still my genetic loading. I just eliminated a major contributing factor to my anxiety and my depression, which was drinking every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about having this conversation with you, because, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, I'm going to quit drinking. Like Stephanie said that she quit drinking and her anxiety went away. And I don't want them to think like,
but it
that's
could,
what
but
I'm
very
saying.
Well, could, it could happen.
Why wouldn't you try? Right. Like, right. Why wouldn't you try? Why make life harder? Really? I mean, I get it because I was on that cycle, that boomerang. Right. I love how you describe that. I mean, I was literally anxious, having panic attacks throughout the day, and then drinking at night just so that I could calm down and, right, and get some rest and get some sleep.
Well, let me ask you a question though.
Yeah.
Did your anxiety go away right away when you quit drinking?
Oh, or no.
Okay. So, and I think that's the important footnote is that I think people will get much more anxious when they first stop.
Who is bad.
Yeah. And then they'll be like, I thought I wasn't going to be anxious. This is bullshit. And then they're like, no. It takes, you know, you have to reset your brain. You have to reset your body, and it takes time.
Yeah. And for me, it was like a withdrawal symptom, basically.
Totally.
You know, I would say it was about 60 days when I finally, and it wasn't like, boom, gone. It was like a gradual, my panic and anxiety attacks got fewer and far between, until one day I was in a situation where normally it would like hit me and I would have a panic attack, and I'm going, oh, wow, you know, I haven't had that in a while. You know,
right,
like one of those type of things.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you realize you're not thinking about drinking anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, oh my God, it was awful. But I educated, like, I am a research person. I don't do anything until I've like researched it and figured out if it's really going to help. And when I, you know, part of connecting the dots with the anxiety and alcohol was me Googling, does alcohol cause anxiety?
Was it like, no shit?
Yeah. And you know, when you Google something and you're like, you can always find something that will say the opposite. No.
Yeah, you can usually find something.
Yeah.
You're like deep in a Reddit thread trying to find proof of
it
life.
It was such a rabbit hole, but I couldn't find anything to tell me, no, keep drinking, it's fine.
Right.
So it was just, I knew it was going to get worse before it got better. And I think that's another, I love that you brought that up, because I think that's another thing that we have to make sure people understand when they're listening to podcasts like this. Like, it's not going to just be like, okay, you're cured, you're good.
No, and alcohol is all about instant gratification, and our brains, just the way that we're wired, even like TikTok, Instagram, all of it, like the instant gratification. And so that first feeling of alcohol is, you know, was wonderful, really. Not to trigger anyone, but the second sip on was fucking bullshit. And then when I stopped drinking, I wanted that same magic cure. I wanted it to be over immediately, and it took a while for the bus to stop rolling before it let me off. And now I just walk, you know, like walk around with my little like to-go bag of anxiety. It's easier to manage. Yeah, it's like you didn't quite finish your dinner, so you have that like random to-go bag, but you still have errands to run, so you just have like this random, like, I need to get this into the fridge.
Like, it's smelling up your backseat.
Yeah,
your
like it smells good, but also like you like have 30 minutes before it needs to get into the fridge, but you got to stop at Target. That is my anxiety. And it just comes with me wherever I go. And it smells, I can smell it like, oh yeah, it smells like warm anxiety. That's how I describe it.
I love
it. How I just did describe it.
How you did describe it. And it's like very relatable. I mean, I feel as if my anxiety, like I said, it's gone, but I still feel anxious from time to time.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think being anxious, feeling anxious is normal, and it's not the same as having clinical anxiety.
Yeah.
I think being anxious about certain things or having a healthy sense of paranoia keeps us surviving.
Yeah.
Keeps us safe. Yeah.
Well, and for me too, is like, anxiety, excitement I get confused with anxiety sometimes too.
Yeah. Anticipation. You know?
Well, I numbed my feelings for, I started drinking at 14 and never wanted to feel anything bad. But then what I did is baselined all my feelings. So I really just was like getting through life without like any extreme emotion. And so like excitement felt like anxiety. So I would drink that away. So now I'm like learning when I'm excited about something, I have to like tell myself, like, you're not anxious, even though it kind of, it can kind of feel the same.
Yeah, it's very similar. Yeah.
And I have to just say, I'm just excited. Like, I'm not anxious. Like, don't go down that road. Go down the road of like, you're excited about like, this is fun. This is exciting. This is new.
Yeah. Opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. It hits different. I still, you know, I can tell the difference. I mean, I have anxiety and then, but before I go give a speech, I might, right when I first step on the stage, I'll feel anxious for a minute before I start speaking, and then usually it calms down. And I don't think about it again. I'm probably the least anxious actually when I am podcasting or recording a TikTok or speaking or performing in some sort of way than when I'm just like doing the dishes, thinking about all of the shit that can go wrong. Or remember in third grade when you did that, like we should think about that right now.
Mm-hmm.
As we're trying to clean. And I'm just like, why? We've already thought about that.
Yeah.
So it's
love that you just brought up your public speaking. Cause I really I'm curious.
Yeah.
How that goes, because I can't even imagine. I mean, as someone that like
I got used to it because I was a teacher.
Okay.
So I was a teacher for 10 years, and then I was a high school assistant principal. So you just get used to speaking in front of a lot of people. And as a high school administrator too, every morning, I'm like, good morning, welcome. You know, doing the morning announcements, all fucking hungover. JK, I was only really drinking the first year I was administrator. The other ones I was, I don't think I'm doing my math correctly, but you get the point.
Yeah.
That's where I, you know, did it. It still scares me, but I just do it scared.
Mm.
As my friend Elise Myers would say, like, just do it scared. And I do. And every time I do it, it gets a little bit easier. I was thrown to the wolves though, because the first time I ever appeared on anything really was a national cable morning show live. And this was in 2018. So I was 2.5 years sober, but I had never done anything. And I was like on one of the morning shows. And I threw up right after because I was so nervous.
Oh my God.
Because I couldn't sleep.
You threw up after.
Yeah, because I couldn't sleep. Because it was East Coast time, so I had to get up at like 2:30 and then drive to LA and then get on the studio and did hair and makeup and then sound check and everything. And I think I went on at like 5:30 California time. But because I had to like leave my house, they had a car pick me up at 2:30 in the morning. There was no way I was going to get to sleep.
No.
So it was like sleep deprivation, total anxiety, no vodka blend.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Think it.
Right.
So once I got through that, I was like, okay, well then the next one felt a little bit easier because it wasn't so whatever. But
well, you knew what to expect.
Yeah, I sort of.
That's
but I
the
still...
problem with me. If I don't know what to expect, I will create some really fun scenarios.
Well, yeah, catastrophic thinking is a hobby of mine. But I don't, when I'm speaking, I feel that's when I feel the most free. And I kind of have what I call traumedy. Is I talk about all of my trauma, but I do it through comedy. And that's how I connect with my audience to land whatever message I'm trying to land for that particular group of people.
Yeah. Well, it worked with me because I am the same way. Like, kind of like to poke fun of things. Yeah. It's probably, you know what? I'm not going to say that. I was going to say it's probably is that a healthy way to do things? No, I'm not going to say it's not a healthy way to do things. I think if it is what works for you,
it's a coping skill.
It is.
I don't think humor is a bad coping skill. I think if it's your only coping skill, it's probably not going to be very sustainable. But at some point, I needed to allow myself to look back at the shit show that was my childhood. And I had many great parts of my childhood. Don't get me wrong. I think people get that twisted when I talk about trauma and childhood. It's not like it was all bad. But some of those things that I did or said or situations I was in, they're funny. They're funny. And I'm going to laugh about them because I've fucking therapied them to death. So we're going to laugh now. It's time to laugh.
I don't know about you, but when I reflect on my drinking days, bringing the humor side in, you know, I used to joke. I think I knew I had a problem. I think I knew I had a problem.
You did?
I don't think I don't know how to explain it.
Well, I think
There was a part of me that knew, and that was the part that joked around about my drinking.
Right.
I was the one making TikToks about mommy needing wine and making. I would make jokes about my drinking, but I think looking at it now, reflecting, it was like a really weird cry for help.
Yeah, it could be.
I found a Snapchat that I saved that I sent to a friend, and I was extremely hungover, and I put that goofy filter where like your mouth goes like this and it disguises your voice because I looked like complete shit, so I didn't even want to and I was talking to her, I was drinking a Bloody Mary, and I was like, this is who I am now. I stayed up all night drinking, and now this is who I am. I have to have a Bloody Mary at 10 in the morning just to function. And I was making light of it, but when I watched it sober, it brought me to tears because I'm going, that girl was saying help me. But because I added a layer of humor to it, they're just like, oh, she's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely using humor as defense to pain. I mean, I would make fun of sober people all the time. Or even in my head, just being like, God, dude, they're so boring.
Lame.
Fake happy. And just what a way to live. Gross, you know? Judginess to protect my own, to insulate the knowledge that I had a problem. I was well aware I had a problem. I didn't care I had a problem until the last several years when I began to try to, what I call, land the plane, try to figure out how do I land the plane? I'm at 30,000 feet. It's really, really turbulent. And I don't want to be here anymore. But it still took me an additional few years to figure out how to actually get to the ground safely.
I love your analogy of land the plane, and you have your merch with the shirt and all that. And I was cracking up because I have this analogy about a plane as well when it comes to the end of my drinking days. But mine was because my anxiety attacks and stuff had gotten so bad. I was literally wanting to crawl out of my skin, and I couldn't function. I had a hard time going anywhere or doing anything. So I always said my sobriety always felt like jumping out of a burning airplane and just hoping that the parachute was going to open. Cause that's what it felt like. Like, I had to get out of the burning plane, but I didn't know what the hell was going to happen once I jumped.
Yeah, decision before provision. And I think that's where people get stuck. I know I was stuck. I wanted guarantees of what sobriety would look like. I wanted guarantees of what my mental health would look like. I would Google, how much weight will I lose? All the fucking bullshit, right? You know, I wanted to know. I wanted a roadmap.
Receipts. I need the receipts right now.
Yeah, and so many people, they want to know exactly what it's like, which is, social media is wonderful for encouraging and inspiring and motivating and connecting, but it's really important to understand that nobody's journey is going to look like anyone else's. It's not a carbon copy. And so, yeah, some people need to just jump out of the plane. My plane just crashed. You know, it just fell to the ground on New Year's Day of 2015 out of the air. I was circling the airport and it ran out of gas and I just fucking boom. And I've been
alcohol-free. Tell me more about that day.
Oh God, New Year's Day 20. So New Year's Eve 2014, my daughter was three. I have three kids. I only had one. Mm-hmm. And we went out to dinner. And this is the TikTok that went so viral of mine, which is so funny because I'll never live it down. But I was drinking white wine because I was like, I'm not going to drink vodka. I'm going to drink white wine because there's less alcohol in it. And I'm moderating now.
Sounds right.
Yeah. So I get home. I've had a few glasses of wine at dinner, get home, have two more bottles of wine. Mm. And then we have to get up and go to breakfast the next morning on New Year's Day at Norm's Diner. And it was real steamy and eggy and crowded and early. And I started hallucinating. What? I had auditory hallucinations. And went to my car. And there's a whole story about it. But essentially, I was hallucinating is the bottom line. And it scared me. So I go to the doctor. Why are you here hallucinating? Why are you hallucinating? Well, I'm having an anxiety attack. I'm super hungover. I'm super anxious. And then, well, you need to stop drinking and here's some medicine to stop drinking. And so I committed to not drink for 30 days because I obviously didn't want to be hallucinating.
Right.
And I had already known I needed to stop. And this was one of the first time that I actually listened to the logic of, okay, if this happens, then if you cross this line, then you need to stop. But I still had full intention of drinking again. I was just going to prove to everyone that I didn't have a problem.
Yep.
And then I was too scared on February 1st to quit the quitting to drink again. I was like horrified. And so my sobriety started very unofficially, very unexpectedly, very abruptly after spending just years considering it. It's like the universe just was like, you know what, Daniel, we're fucking sick of hearing about you and your thoughts. So just crash.
Yeah.
That's how it all started.
Wow.
Yep.
Hallucination.
Yeah. It's casual.
You know, the last time I shouldn't say the last time, like I hallucinate all the time.
I had a
hallucination audible in the spirit of 420 as we record this.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Towards the end of my drinking career, the alcohol really wasn't doing much for me anymore. So I decided to experiment with edibles.
Yeah. I feel like that's part of the starter pack of sobriety is that you try to trade out alcohol for weed.
Okay. Thank you for saying that. Okay. Yeah. Cause I've never actually, this is, I've never shared this. Like,
oh yeah. Publicly. No, this is, I recorded an episode with Jenna on our podcast about this. I tried to be a stoner. Mm. I'm like, if I can just smoke weed, it'll be so much easier. I could not smoke weed, spoiler. And so, but yes, I feel you on that one. I didn't mean to cut you off. So smoking weed and you're hallucinating. Let's hear it.
Easter. Ah! Why not? Why not? Right?
Why not? It'd be three Easter bunnies.
Yeah. And my husband joined in with the fun and we had a couple that we knew they were over. So we all did this. It was the most traumatic event of my life. And the thing is, I did it several times after this and I shouldn't have. I should have learned. Slow learner once again. I don't know. I know there's like all these different strands and stuff. This is how uneducated I am on the whole thing. And obviously I had the strand that didn't agree with me because I was hearing crazy things. Like I went into the bathroom and like the exhaust fan was on. Yeah. And I thought there was children in there. Like I could hear children's laughter. I couldn't sleep. I'm like, this is horrible. Like I'm more anxious now than if I would have just drank.
Totally. I know. And I think that's the substitution, the bargaining phase. I like to think of getting sober in the stages of grief. So there's denial and anger, and then there's bargaining, of course, where you're trying to swap out one for another because I was so pissed that I had to give up drinking.
Yeah. We need advice.
Yeah. And I was like, well, you know, weed is legal. It was, it was legal in California, even at that time, back in 2015, if you were 21. Right. And I don't know. I was just like, it's socially acceptable in Southern California. And, it seems like people I knew enjoyed it, but my body was like, Daniel, we already told you that we are done with substances. I don't understand what you don't understand.
Yeah. Clean it up.
Clean it up. That was before I crash landed, but it was in the phase of like in between trying not to drink, trying to smoke weed instead. Like, oh, the worst.
Yeah.
But it's like a starter pack. It's part of the process. I guarantee you everyone listening to this is like, oh, yep, me too. Yeah.
Or maybe they're doing that right now on 420.
Yeah, they're probably sucking a Jolly Rancher being like, oh, I'm going to get real high and fucking whatever.
Oh,
good for you. Learn your lesson.
Yeah.
Or don't, you know, do it. Do you.
Hey, maybe it'll work for them. I don't know. But I'm with you. I was like, no, hard no. No, and like no. I said, I tried it a few more times because I learned of the strands. Because then a friend was like, oh, you did the wrong strand. Try this. This is more chill. That's what you need. Still, I didn't like the way I felt.
Well, that's like people who are like, well, I just can't drink tequila. I get crazy on tequila. And I'm like, yeah, but if you drink vodka, it's still alcohol, you know? And it drives me crazy when people are like, that was the tequila. No. That was you. Getting really fucked up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And although there's certain alcohols I could not drink, and I guess maybe there's truth to that. Certain alcohols are worse for people or have a different effect on people.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing with like the whole strain of marijuana and like types of drink. Like, you know, instead of saying, wow, that was a really hard experience, you should not smoke marijuana. They're just like, oh, just pick
a different
strand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like, don't drink tequila, just try vodka instead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but
how many times,
even with drinking though, like switching it up, thinking that might be the problem.
Oh, I know. I know.
Oh,
that's
I'm just going to drink
that's
wine
why I was
now.
Like, I'm just going
to
drink wine.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Wine because I have to drink so much more of it and it will take me longer and there's less alcohol in it. And yeah, okay, but then I would drink just gallons of it.
Yeah, me too.
Just gallons. Buy the double bottles, like whatever those things are called.
Mm-hmm.
So gross.
Box.
Oh yeah.
You know you're getting in deep when you have to buy the box. Because the box tells no stories. No one knows how much is in the box.
Right. Yeah. And if you get really crafty, you can actually like put stuff in the box to make it feel heavier.
Yes.
On top of the bag that's pretty much empty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But don't tell anyone I told you that.
No. Follow this podcast for more tips.
That's right.
Okay. Well, let's move on from the.
All right. Let's go ahead.
The 420.
Got you.
But I love that you did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about having these conversations. There's so much comfort, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, the struggle bus is real and it's big and there's plenty of room.
It keeps getting bigger, honestly.
Yeah. It's definitely having an expansion, which is nice.
Love it.
More socially acceptable and a lot more. I mean, even in the last 8.5 years that I've been sober, I feel like the social acceptability has exponentially changed. And more, I would say, in the female demographic, there's a lot of, you know, chatter with that, rightfully so.
Yeah.
With the mom wine culture, et cetera. And now more there's not many of us men talking about sobriety, I don't think. But it's certainly being spoken about.
Yeah. Well, that's why I appreciate you coming on here, because I've only interviewed one other guy for my podcast. Okay. There's not a lot that I have women reach out to me every day wanting to share their story.
Right.
I don't know. It must just be a thing. I don't know, where guys just kind of want to keep it to themselves. I don't know, but I just.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of ego there, and, mm-hmm. and ego is the enemy, as we know. And they don't want to talk about it. But more than that, like, they're just, the percentage of men that quit versus women that quit is significantly less. I mean, women mm-hmm. are much more likely to go to therapists. They're much more likely to reach out for help, to have self-efficacy, self-awareness. Men, we're just not as likely. And I didn't start talking about sobriety. I mean, I've been on Instagram, or I've been on TikTok, I guess, maybe 2 years tops. And I didn't start talking about sobriety for after 6 months. So maybe like a year and a half, I've been talking about sobriety on TikTok, and that's it. So for 6-7 years, I didn't even talk about being sober. I only posted content about being an educator and teenagers and mental health. And it was all mental health.
So where did you get your support from up until then?
I mean, I had support. I just didn't talk about it. I was going to go back and look at what my first TikTok was about sobriety, because I don't remember what it was, but it was not, when I started TikTok, it was not to talk about sobriety. It was just like, okay, I'm going to take the same thing I'm saying on Instagram and move it over to TikTok and just kind of grow, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. see what happens. And at some point there was a shift where I talked about it and it got good feedback. And I was like, you know, it feels good to talk about this on TikTok because I don't talk about it on Instagram. So then I just started, and that's what I've talked about kind of ever since.
Well, I'm glad you do.
Well, thank you. I mean, TikTok is a weird, wild place, but it's been quite the adventure for sure.
I just started watching TikToks again. I took a long break.
Yeah, I don't consume as many. I still produce several a day. I don't consume a lot of TikTok, I'll be honest.
I'm a consumer.
You are?
I'm a consumer. Yeah.
I'm more of a, I produce a lot mm-hmm. of content compared to how much I consume.
Yeah. I have a hard time making reels and stuff. I don't know. It's like.
Why?
I don't know. It takes me so long. I think it's the perfectionist thing, and I'm definitely working on that. But I just, yeah, it's just a struggle.
Yeah, I don't edit really or anything. I just say what I'm going to say, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know?
Well, everyone that I talk to that are like you, that just, you know, they're putting them out, that's what they all say. Oh, it takes me like 3 minutes. I don't even edit. I get an idea, I record it, and I throw it out there, and I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I plan for like a day, and then I find the right audio, and then I find the right outfit, and then
that's too much.
And then I'm like, oh, I don't like it. It's just, I gotta come at it at a different angle. And I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's part of the growth curve of, mm-hmm. of sobriety too, is just giving less fucks. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares what people think? I mean, it's nice to be liked. It's mm-hmm. nice to be appreciated, mm-hmm. but if people aren't chirping at you, if they're not coming for you, if they're not talking shit about you, then your message isn't polarizing enough to be effective.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No, I agree with you. Yeah. I actually have been thinking lately, I really need to start ruffling some more feathers.
Yeah, you might. It's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I used to get really triggered about negative comments, and sometimes I do, but I used to reply to them, like video reply to mm-hmm. them. And I don't do that anymore. I just block and bless. I don't give people airtime. It's one strike and you're out, really.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't, the world is gigantic. TikTok is gigantic. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like me, I just don't care, because we don't know each other. And if we do know each other and you're behaving this way, we no longer know each other, you know?
Right.
So
yeah,
either way, I'm over it.
Yeah.
And that's part of the boundaries of sobriety, is just not tolerating people, places, things, events, hobbies, any bullshit that's going to interfere with my wellness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Period.
Period. You know, talking about relationships, because I know that's a big hang up for people in early sobriety. Like, I've had people, I mean, that's probably like the biggest question people ask me, like, what does it look like for your relationships? And I'm not talking just marital or partner. Right. I'm talking like friends, all of that. How did that transpire for you? Like, did you, I'm guessing you had like your drinking buddies.
Yeah. I had drinking friends and, but most of my drinking was super isolative, you know?
Okay.
I would appropriately drink in a public setting. So if it was a happy hour or a party or dinner, I would drink on par with what was socially acceptable, but I would drink mathematically before and after so I could get the correct kind of drunk.
Ooh.
So it was very isolative. When I stopped drinking, I was so busy with work anyways that I wasn't being really social at that point. So I didn't like dramatically lose a bunch of friends because I had already kind of stopped going out. As I was drinking more, I was isolating more. But I will say that the friendships definitely shifted. And I really don't onboard any new friends who are heavy drinkers. I don't onboard any new people into my life who have drinking as a priority. My wife still drinks. I have friends that drink. I don't care if you drink. But it just can't be the number one thing that you... If you're leading with alcohol, if I walk into your house and you have like a live, laugh, love type sign, but having to do with alcohol up, like you're off the list, you know, and no offense, because Home Goods is wonderful, but like, I just don't like, I'm just not into the whole like tiki fucking bar culture aesthetic.
Yeah. So. I know. I had to get rid of all that shit.
Yeah. And I think that's part of,
I had all that in my house.
Oh, same. Like I had like the wine fridge and like, I'm going to make a bulletin board out of corks and fucking all of this bullshit. Like making like a coffee table out of beer bottle caps that I crushed, you know, all of it. I've done
all of it.
I'm
going to be crafty.
Guilty as charged. This is like pre Etsy. This is just fucking like getting your fucking drunk, anxious self something to do. And definitely didn't mean to sound judgy there.
Not at all, because I agree with you. I don't
onboard new people. And so then without onboarding new people that have lead with alcohol, the people that are still heavy in it have sort of shown themselves out of the arena, or I have shown myself out of their arena, and there has been no judgment, no bad blood. I would still say hello to them if I saw them. Perhaps we follow each other on social media. Perhaps we don't. Very organic. Very few relationships were like crash and burn. But in my sober group that I run, I mean, there are a lot of people that have experienced some significant fallout. And this is, I'm making a generalization based on gender, but this is more so with the girls, the females, the women, than the men, where their girlfriends get pissed at them or stop inviting them or like, why did you tell Heather first when I'm closer with you, Shannon, you know, like, and it just turns into this whole fucking thing about that has nothing to do with alcohol and everything to do with drama.
Drama.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It was my experience was a little different because I didn't drink in isolation. I actually surrounded myself. I chose people who were drinking just as much or more than I was.
Okay.
Some were even drinking more than me. And that was intentional too, looking back.
Because it 100%.
It made me feel a little better. Like, oh, I'm not like her over there. So
yeah, the comparison.
She's definitely got a problem. So yeah, I mean,
don't get me wrong. I went out and I was social, but I just, and our friends, our couple of friends were like people that would drink a lot. And just, they still do sometimes. So I definitely had to take a time out from some of our like original friends when we first moved to California, that we're still friends with now and our kids are all the same age and everything. But as we've gotten older, what I realized though is like, I'm like, everyone drinks so much. And really, it was me. It was me. I was the one that was drinking so much. No one else was drinking as much as I thought they were in my brain with the close friends that we still have now. I'm like, God, there's like, everyone just gets so fucked up. No. That's me. That was me.
I'm the problem.
So what happened
me.
With, yeah, it's like a Taylor Swift song. So what did you do with your friendships? How did you manage that?
We moved away. No,
kind of. I know, honestly, right?
So we live 5 hours away from family. And what we've kind of done is in our old neighborhood, we just became, because we like to drink at home because it's cheaper in the amount that my husband and I were drinking. It was a lot cheaper to do that. It's a lot safer. No one has to worry about driving and
more convenient.
All of that. So we just kind of like recruited all the neighbors.
Yeah.
And we all
became the party house.
Yeah. And we all became really good friends and enabled our alcoholism, basically, is what happened. And we moved out of that neighborhood before I got sober. But I wanted to move out of that neighborhood because it was kind of when I started to realize that drinking was getting...
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards. Menards.com for details.
Couldn't keep up anymore is kind of where I was at. I didn't ever think I would ever get sober. I always thought I could be a normal drinker someday, but yeah, as you know,
moderate.
That never happened. But it was the first step. We moved out of the neighborhood. Like, we had to. And at the time, it wasn't the reason, but in the back of my mind, it was the reason.
Are you still friends with any of those people?
A few. And it's bad over there. Like, we're talking DUIs, people losing their jobs, divorces. And it's all because alcohol is just, like, every single problem that they all have is alcohol. And it's like Groundhog Day. It's the same drama and the same bullshit over and over and over and over. My husband and I are just like, it's like we like lit the neighborhood on fire and then we left.
Right. Like you said, you're like, have fun, bitches.
I'm like, shit, what did we do?
Is your husband sober?
No. He is definitely working on himself as far as, I would say my husband's in the, I think I can moderate phase.
Got it.
So he does these big, long, like, breaks.
Yeah.
And then he'll try and then he's like, shit. You know, like, he can't stop.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't, the last time he drank as of right now was St. Patrick's Day.
Got it.
And that was like, I'm just going to go after work and have a couple. Mm. And that was at
how did
3.
That work out?
And he didn't get home till like midnight. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think St. Patrick's Day was on a Friday this year.
Sure was.
So it was like double trouble. Double trouble.
But I give him mad props, honestly. Like, everyone, like, you know, you even said, this is, everyone's journey is so different. Everyone's reasons are different. Everyone's, like, rock bottom or weight or whatever wakes them up is different. And, I mean, when we're on this topic of relationships, I mean, that's what I always tell people, too. I'm like, you got to just be the light, but don't sit there and, like, pressure them and like,
oh yeah, no, I know. I don't walk around with a whistle being like, mm-mm, you have a problem. I actually don't. What's funny is that I don't like to talk about being sober in my day-to-day life. In fact, I find it sort of irritating if I'm at a party or a restaurant or out with friends and somebody wants to corner me and ask me a bunch of questions about their cousin Billy or whatever. And I'm fucking like, I'm just trying to have some social time.
Right.
You can listen to the pod, watch TikTok, book an appointment. But like, I definitely know that for me, when people realize I wasn't coming for their alcohol, meaning I'm like, that the tension was greatly diminished. And also when I was not so fixated, a lot of my fixation on other people's drinking was still in my own denial, right? Like I was fixated that they were still drinking because I was still pissed that I couldn't. I don't give a shit if you drink or not. Do a keg stand, mom. Like, go for it. Go for it. Be the cool mom at college. Your kids go to the school in the South and you're going to do a keg stand at mom's weekend.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brenda. Fucking light
Knock
it up.
Yourself.
But I don't care. Like, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to judge you. It's not my business.
Yeah.
I really don't believe people can change until they really critically want to for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can try to quit drinking for someone else, but you can't get sober unless you really want to.
Right. I know. I'm starting to get over. I'm 16 months sober, just shy of 16 months sober. And I.
Not, I don't just like, that shit.
I'm sorry. 16 months sober.
That's right. That's a lot. That's a lot of months and that's a lot of days.
It's a lot of months.
So don't just be like, I'm only.
I know. And I still have issues with people drinking. And it's not like because I want to tell them not to drink. It's an actual like concern. Like I'm concerned for their health. Like it's just who I am. Like now right. that I know what I know.
Right.
That's where it bothers me. But it's not like I'm going up to them and going like, oh my God, don't drink. Like, do you know what it could be doing to you? But that's the internal when I'm around people that are drinking. And I still struggle with that because.
Yeah. I've had to totally let it go. I know, but you, if your long-term goal is sustained recovery, mm-hmm. you surround yourself with people who have a similar mindset
mm-hmm.
and you don't spend your emotional equity on people who don't.
Right.
You can't save everyone. Mm-mm. You can do it. You can have a great platform, a great podcast. You can put yourself out there. But, I discovered a lot of my shit was, when people would behave a certain way, do I get annoyed with drunk people? Mm. For sure.
Who doesn't? You know, when I was annoyed when I was drunk.
Yeah. Like they're talking like 1 centimeter from my face, shouting, swaying, telling me
repeating.
About yeah. I'm just like, God, we just fucking met. But it would bring up a lot of shame in me. It would remind me of things of drunk me. Like, oh God, I used to do that. I used to be that way. So my anger toward others was really anger toward myself. Mm-hmm. Cause I could see my history in their current state of being basically. So,
wow. Yeah. That's probably exactly why because that's why I, when I quit, I mean, that was my biggest thing is like, that's what turned me off to alcohol was knowing what I was like, I was self-harming myself, you know, self-harm.
Yeah, it was
causing
self-harm.
The anxiety. I was having health issues and shit. Like
it's definitely
deep, Daniel. That's deep. Honestly, you got me thinking like, obviously then that's why I have a problem.
Self-medication.
Yeah. That's obviously why I look at people that way now, because that's how I see my own relationship
maybe.
With alcohol.
I mean, it could be. I mean, but that's not to diminish that you are a compassionate person and that right. you care about other people's wellness. There's certainly people who are super close to me that I wish in my mind that would quit drinking.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But like, just like your average person, I could give a shit.
That yeah.
And whatever you yeah. do, you. Mm-hmm. And even people that I'm close with, like if that's what they want to do, that's their choice.
Mm-hmm.
And just mm-hmm. as it's my choice to not drink, I don't want to have to keep explaining why I am not drinking. So I'm not going to put it on them to explain to me why they are drinking. The law of attraction exists, I believe. People will reach out and they'll ask me. And I've had other friends quit. My parents quit drinking after I did. My aunt and uncle quit drinking after I did.
Oh,
like
wow.
There's been a ripple. But not because of me necessarily, but just, I just do think there is some organic attraction that people get curious about and they don't do it. If you're going to sober splain them, they do right. it. If you are just going to like be comfortable and confident and keep moving in your own sober journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My dad actually just quit smoking. And he's 70 and he's smoked all his life.
Right.
Like, since he was, I mean, they started smoking young back in the day.
I'm like, yeah, I'm sure they did.
We kind of did too, but, but Yeah. And, you know, he called and he was so proud and he was telling me about it. He read that book by Alan Carr.
Yeah.
And he said it just shifted something in his head. But one thing he said to me was, I thought, you know, if Steph can get sober, I can quit smoking.
Exactly.
So, you know, that was never my intention of getting sober, was so my dad would quit smoking. But, you're right.
That's the ripple effect. Yeah.
It is the ripple effect. And now my brother quit smoking.
See?
Hey.
And those are the kinds of organic changes that are really powerful and proof that you don't need a platform. You don't need to be anything to anyone other than just be like, have integrity to yourself, mm-hmm. to your own personal goals, mm-hmm. hold boundaries, mm-hmm. don't sober-splain. I think mm-hmm. sober-splaining is like the worst thing you can do. If you start rattling off statistics about fucking liver and bullshit. Mm-hmm. And if you say the word enzymes in a sentence to somebody who's drinking, I want you to go take a cold shower and calm the fuck down. Okay. Unless you are like a clinician and they have come to see you, or you are a doctor, if you say the word enzymes, I'm going to put you in the shower. You need to calm down.
Enzymes. I don't think I'm not that scientific.
Levels. Like, how are your levels with your labs, or, you know, just like, no.
Oh my gosh.
Unless it's an answer to a question, the answer is no.
Right.
I'm just being silly, everyone. Sorry.
I love it.
People are like, who is this guy?
The humor of it all.
Yeah. The whole thing is wild.
It is. It's wild. It's exciting. It's like crazy. I don't know. I think the biggest takeaway on this conversation is the whole anxiety thing, really, for me and for you and anybody that has anxiety. And I mean, just dive into your relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, I think the only way to know is to do. So I think people often think that sober curiosity is thinking about quitting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's contemplation.
Yeah, it's
sober curiosity. Yes, is experimenting with sobriety like you did with drugs and alcohol. So mm-hmm. like living long enough without it to see the difference is mm-hmm. actually how you know. And then once you have your information, you can make an informed decision about what you want to do. And the foreverness of it really stops people. The permanency of it stops people from even trying, because they're like, I can't do this forever. Well, no one's asking you to do that. Mm-mm. Just fucking do it long enough to see the difference mm-hmm. and then continue to see if you like it or not.
Right. See if it's worth it.
And yeah. And I don't know any people who are like, you know what? Getting sober was the worst decision I ever made.
Mm-mm. Not a single person.
No one. Zero people. I know people that, you know, get sober and then go back out, but then they come back and they're like, you know, I
shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, shouldn't have done that. But I don't know the reverse.
Like, I don't either.
Yeah, so there, I don't think there's any like anti-sober influencers, really, you know, like rooting against it. Which would be an interesting take, you know, that might be a hot market.
I'd like to hear what they'd have to say, though.
I would bet you they wouldn't say the word enzyme. So.
Oh, my gosh. All right. On that note.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yes,
I knew it would be. I mean, like I said, I feel like I was in an advantage. I already knew what to expect. Like, I love your banter. I love the way you talk about things, like all of it. Just keep being you. And I'm going to take note on that. And I'm going to start coming into myself a little bit more, even if it does piss people off. I'm going to just start being Steph. Like, that's what I intended to do. And that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. There's no one else. There's only one you. So be it.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today. Remember, I am just a woman on a mission to normalize sobriety and living a sober lifestyle. I am not a licensed therapist or a doctor. Please, if alcohol is causing serious physical or mental health issues, seek professional help. If you enjoyed the podcast, be sure to hit follow so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, leaving a 5-star review will help this podcast reach more people like you in the sober community. It's an easy way to spread the word in normalizing a sober lifestyle. You should never feel alone in sobriety, so feel free to reach out to me via email or through my Instagram account @ThisIsStephSober. Links to both are listed in the show notes.